Welcome to Literary Quest, a podcast hosted by us, Vicky and Marissa, where we discuss our favorite in fantasy fiction and hopefully can direct you in your quest to find your next great read.
Welcome to Literary Quest. This week, we are discussing Atlas Paradox by Olivia Blake. This is part two in a trilogy, and we discussed part one back in October of 2023. So I'll be doing characters and Marissa will do the plot. So for characters, we have our main character. Her name is Libby. She is one of the most powerful and smartest people at the library, right, in this society. She can manipulate objects and manipulate time. In the previous book, she was even able to stop time and create wormholes with the right partners. At the end of the previous book, she was kidnapped, but it was set up to look like she was murdered. Tristan was able to see through the illusion, but nobody knows where or when she is. There's Nico. He is in his early 20s. He and Libby have been rivals for a long time. Like Libby, he's able to manipulate objects and the space around him. He's very likable. However, the absence of Libby in this book has made him feel isolated and lonely. He's very good friends with Gideon Drake, a half mermaid, a half satyr, dreamwalker. In this book, Nico has asked Gideon to help him find Libby through her dreams. Next, we have Reyna. She is quiet but not shy. She likes to keep to herself. She's a naturalist, which means that she's sort of like a battery for others, and plants can communicate with her. They call her mother. In this book, she begins to believe that they are gods of a sort. She realizes that the library does not always allow them, even though they are members of the society, to take out just any books. She enlists Callum's help to try and override the system. We have Callum. He is an empath, but he is notoriously without empathy. He is able to manipulate everyone around him with varying degrees of success. His lack of empathy, however, led to him being chosen to be murdered near the end of the last book, but that didn't happen. And so now he's without any friends, he's depressed, and he's frequently drunk. In the last book, he was friends with Tristan, but since Tristan had been the one tasked to kill him, that friendship fell apart. Tristan, he has spent much of life being told he was worthless and without talent or purpose. He is struggling to adjust to the idea that he's incredibly powerful. He can see through illusions to a new structure of reality. In this book, he learns how to manipulate matter. However, no one really understands how or why this works. He's only able to trigger it by being close to death or in a deadly situation. Then we have Parisa. She is incredibly smart and beautiful. She is a telepath and can easily fish out most people's thoughts and secrets. She uses her beauty to help lower people's defenses, and she is one of the more aloof members. She does not like to work in group as she does not trust people. However, she has been having an affair with Dalton to get information out of him without his knowledge. Dalton is a member of the Alexandrian Society, and he's a guide for the recruits that are now members of the society. His affair with Parisa results in her learning secrets about the society. He's an animator and believes that he somehow was actually the one to make Libby look dead. In this book, he allows Parisa to be in his head more, and she discovers there is some part of him that's locked up. We have Atlas, who is the current caretaker of the Alexandrian Library. He is a suspicious character, and it's hard to tell what his ultimate goal is. He has some connection with Ezra, Libby's ex, who wants to take down the society and spread all the information in the library to everyone in the world. For our location, this mainly takes place in the Library of Alexandria, but the characters do leave. In this book, London and Scotland, as well as New York and Nevada, all make appearances.
So the Atlas Paradox begins where the Atlas Six ended, with Libby, who is not dead, having been left in a pocket universe by her ex, Ezra, a time traveler, who believes that faking Libby's death and hiding her will prevent Atlas Blakely, caretaker for the society, from assembling a team of super magical initiates and keep them from ending the world. Libby is angry But she is also really tired and she sleeps a lot, which ends up working out in her favor because Nico's friend and unrequited love, Gideon, is working with Nico to try to find and rescue Libby by communicating with her through her dreams. Meanwhile, at the mansion that houses the society's library, the rest of the initiates are tasked with beginning their research project for their second year, which is part of the terms of their initiation. Their task is just to contribute something to the library's knowledge. They undergo an initiation rite, which strains relationships in the house, especially between Nico and Reyna, and with Callum, with his own sense of self-worth. Each initiate seeks out different paths of study that are separate, though they all seem to be drawn to a common intention in some way, which is kind of guided by Atlas. Tristan realizes that he can manipulate Quanta. Reyna comes to believe that she and the other initiates may be gods. Parisa investigates the library's consciousness. Callum explores thought, specifically how to annoy Atlas. And Nico does something that I genuinely just don't remember what it is. Do you remember what it is?
Other than like killing Tristan over and over?
Yeah, what was his project? He was ready to present it at the end of the book. I have no idea
Oh.
what he was trying to study. Yeah.
Oh, did
Who
they
knows?
say? I don't know. All right, it's a mystery. I'm sure she said, all right, we got a mystery.
There we go. So who knows? Atlas reveals that he is interested in the idea of creating a multiverse. Or opening a window into another universe and believes with the talents of those within this group of initiates, plus Libby, who by now has gotten stuck in 1989, thanks to Ezra, it would be possible to achieve that. However, there are some problems. Opening a window into a universe could be potentially catastrophic. Everyone in their universe could die. Also, Libby is stuck in the past, and Ezra is collaborating with enemies of the society, like the Forum and some other groups, to bring down the society and make the knowledge within the library known to the public. What will they do? What will happen? Spoilers abound.
So, how did you like this book?
I enjoyed it, maybe not quite as much as the first one, but still a lot. What did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. Enough to put it on hold in the library, but not enough to buy it. But yeah, I didn't like it as much as the first book. I felt a little disjointed, I guess. I think maybe just because in the other book, were the characters around each other more? I feel like they were working together more,
Yeah,
maybe.
they were
So that
a
may have
little bit.
been, yeah, so that probably contributed to that like kind of disjointed feeling to me. And I mean, weeks and weeks and weeks go by without like anything happening, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I did enjoy it.
You just mentioned all of the weeks going by. I found it really difficult to keep up with where we were at in time in this story. I mean, there was one passage where Callum was talking and like he was talking about something that had happened in the past, but it felt like the present, and then we had jumped forward like weeks to the like gala that they were hosting at the live at the mansion. So, and then with Libby, she was asleep in the pocket universe, and then suddenly she was in 1989, and then suddenly she was in Los Angeles. It was hard or like confusing to keep up with where we were at.
Yeah, I'm assuming that this takes place over a year, right? Because at the beginning they have that weird ritual, which
Yeah.
just was really uncomfortable for everyone, I think. And then at the end they're presenting their stuff.
I think part of it is also the fact that this book is really driven by characters. It's not like an action driven plot. So the author really delves in with the characters and what they're doing at particular moments and thinking, which is fine, but it is different from a lot of the stories that I read, where the plot is driven by action.
Yeah, it definitely, yeah, the not a lot actually happens in this book, right? Like
Right.
in terms of things, there's not a lot that actually happens, which made it feel a lot longer than it was, I have to say. But it wasn't bad. Like I liked being in, everyone's head. That was cool. I just, even the things that like did happen though, I feel like it wasn't that big, right? Like
Right.
it's, I like, so I was, it's character driven, right? And so I was updating the characters and I noticed that for Reyna and Parisa, there was really nothing to update with them that much.
Yeah.
Like I was like, what did they do this whole book?
Yeah.
So there was some of that feeling, but it wasn't like in a bad way. It was just, what do you,
Yeah, it just was.
yeah.
This book would not land well with people who have to have all of the answers to everything in the story.
Yes,
And I felt
I.
that way about the last one too. I mean, you just leave with more questions than answers.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was, other than Libby like returning to the present, was anything actually really resolved?
I don't, it didn't seem like it.
Yeah. Well,
I
we got
don't,
Libby back.
yeah, Libby
That.
came back. That was the big point. Tristan figured out how to, I mean, at least get into his powers. So there was that. I don't really know, like, what are Raina and Callum doing? I don't, what are they doing?
Okay, I
What,
have no idea.
like,
I'm glad
what
I
is
was.
Parisa doing? Like, what is happening with these people?
I don't know what to do. At least with like Nico and Tristan, right? They're clearly trying to get Tristan's power to work,
Yes.
right? We've got that going on. We know Reyna is trying to do something like get origin stories, I guess, from the library,
Yeah.
right? But it won't give them to her. So she's. I don't understand how she's using Callum to get the books, though. Like, how
Yeah.
is, I don't understand how that's working. What is it about? So I know she's like the battery, right?
Yeah.
But what is it about him even being like an empath? I guess maybe he just bullies the library into get like mentally into giving the books. I don't understand how that's working.
Yeah, I don't know either. Or like, is she, so he's perceiving her feelings and then she's amplifying them through him?
Maybe.
Is that what's happening? I don't understand. I don't know. I don't understand. I don't understand their plot lines. I don't understand what they're doing.
No.
Specifically, Raina. Callum is in a downward spiral from
Love that.
the whole book.
That was amazing.
Yeah. He was probably one of my least favorite characters in the last one, but his moments were some of my favorite ones in this story.
Yeah. When they're doing the ritual, it's like him confronting himself,
Yeah.
right? And he admits that taking on like part of his power when he takes away either like Libby's anxiety or something, then he feels the anxiety, right? And he goes, I hurt. But then he says back to himself, nobody cares. I was, burn, you self-burned.
Yes. Yeah. I felt so bad for him in that moment too, because everybody thinks he's a callous asshole because he's just a callous asshole, but it turns out like being an empath is terrible.
Yeah.
Being a telepath, I would imagine, would be terrible as well. Like Parisa is really aloof. And I think for good reason. Knowing everyone's thoughts about you would suck.
I would. Yeah.
Taking on everyone's feelings would be terrible. There's something else that I really like though. So like we get little glimpses of like how much Callum has been doing for people. He makes a comment about how he knows that every tag in Tristan's shirts irritates him. I guess he's been taking that little niggle of irritation away from him this whole time, but not anymore.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, he helps Tristan, right?
Yeah.
Towards the end, he does the equations and stuff. He's not as, I mean, probably because his like best and only friend tried to murder him.
Yeah.
He's not as bad as he was in the last book. So I definitely liked him more.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, he is entertaining.
Yes. However, I'm curious about what's going to happen with him and Reyna because at the end of the story, they go and have a meeting with Tristan's dad. For why? For what? For nefarious reasons.
Seems like it, considering what Tristan's dad put out a hit on him.
Yeah, and Callum made a comment about becoming a despot at some point. So who knows? Perhaps Tierney will follow us into the next book. I was concerned about Libby being left alone in a pocket universe. She's not the person that needs to be left alone in a universe by herself.
No, I was worried for her as well.
Yeah.
I for sure thought her anxiety was gonna maybe get the best of her there.
Yeah.
But she did really well, you know.
Yeah, sister thrived.
Yeah, she did really well.
I thought it was interesting that every character seemed to view Libby as their conscience. I think every one of them made some comment about Libby being their conscience.
Yeah. I also think it was really interesting that one of them said something like, oh, Libby and her anxiety haunted this. Like, we were all being haunted by Libby and her anxiety. And I was, it, if you ever miss me or something, don't say, oh, I miss Vicky and her anxiety. Because I just don't think that was really, could you imagine being, you know, whisked away or left behind or something? And everyone's like, wow, I really miss her and her anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah, I would not want that to be, you know, my quality that was
Right?
missed.
Yeah. But yes, yes, everyone does say something about them being conscious. And I was curious, I'm curious about your take on Tristan with this, because he really, I can't tell if he's romantically interested in Libby or if he just really admires her morality and her goodness.
Yeah.
So,
Same.
yeah, okay. Wasn't
I can't really tell either. Because they had that, they hooked up in the last book, and it kind of seemed like he was interested in her. But then it's hard to, I don't know, because it's also with her that he was able to, like, make some of his power work. So. Without her, maybe he sees her kind of like how he uses Nico in this book.
Yeah.
Maybe his relationship with Libby is somehow tied to like his ability to use his power. Although he does seem, I mean, he and Nico are really the only ones that do any actual work to get Libby back.
Right?
And Tristan, it almost seems like, is more dedicated to, well, and we don't know how much of that is actually true. Tristan does seem extremely dedicated to figuring out how to get her back and moving her through time and figuring out stuff like how to manipulate things so that they could get her back. Nico, I feel like, doesn't devote as much thought to it, but I wonder if that's because he's got Gideon doing all of the work in his dreams to find her and communicate with her.
Yeah, so I definitely think that's part of it. I also think that now Tristan, and he lost his other friend, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so now he's like, well, I connected with Libby.
Yeah.
I think that mate could have like done some of that too. He wants to, like, even if it's a friendship, just connect with someone again in a pleasant
Yeah.
way. Because I mean, he and Nico do kind of get close. He opens up a little bit to Nico, but there's this weird, like, I'm a man,
Yeah.
I don't have feelings sort
Yeah.
of thing that happens. But yeah.
Yeah. They definitely all seem to kind of hate each other.
Yeah.
Still, That was a big thing in the last book. They all kind of hated each other, except Nico and Libby, who were like straight out of college and all about some teamwork. And that still kind of seems like the case. Nico's trying to work with people. And I think part of that's just Nico's personality as well. Nico needs people, he needs to interact with other people. And Libby, I think she's kind of like the catalyst is maybe not the right word. The thing that kind of melds them all together in some way, or tries to.
And in the last book, I mean, you'd think that some of their animosity towards each other would have calmed down a little bit, considering in the one of them is gone, right? And the last book was basically like, oh, you got to get rid of one of your people. Like, there's no threat of who's going to murder who. Maybe be a little more relaxed. Nope. Still hate each other. But okay.
Well, that I feel like the initiation rite thing did not really do a lot to help them love each other. That definitely put a damper on Reyna's friendship with Nico, so.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how I feel about that.
Yeah, say more.
So I understand her being hurt because, like, maybe he views her as weak or something, but she just is like, okay, well, that's how you see me, just shuts him out. Like, that's it. Now she's really mad at him too, but she doesn't have emotions, so she's not mad. It's just this weird prickly feeling or something. I don't know. And then she like tries to hang out with him at one point in Spar, and then she gets mad at him and leaves, but she never expresses herself. And it's like, hey, what? And she also is refusing to acknowledge her own emotions about it, though. So it was just frustrating. And I felt
Agree.
bad for Nico because it was somebody else he had like he could be friendly with and have a connection with, and she just iced him out for, as far as he knew, no good reason. But and I also think that I don't think he portrayed her badly. You know, like, okay, so yeah, she was not the strongest fighter, but she knew that. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I agree. I don't think that the way that she interacted with Nico was fair to Nico. And I felt bad for him because she was someone that he was really close to and felt like was a really good friend in the last book, more so than Libby, probably, in terms of like actual ability to be friends with someone. And they did spar a lot. And I think there's a good reason, or a great reason, for us to not know what other people think about us all of the time. And I don't think that he saw her as being inadequate, but what she perceived from his image of her is that she is inadequate. I think she's upset because of her own feelings.
But she's refusing to acknowledge
Yes.
the
And also refusing to talk to Nico about Nico, who is like a big puppy dog, you know? Pretty short attention span, it seems like, very interested in his own self and things, and n not necessarily with, I mean, not with any harm, just like highly distractible and highly into his own like world, and definitely not a telepath, can't read her mind. And so she's upset, and he tries to engage with her, and she shuts him down, and he doesn't know what to do, and she won't talk about her feelings. Be an adult. Tell him how you feel. Tell him that you're upset. You don't even have to be friends after that. But he doesn't understand why you're upset or what he did wrong, which means that there's not an opportunity to repair.
I was.
Or even explain. Right? Because her own thoughts are like, he thinks I'm so weak and whatever. He may not think that at all, not really.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think he thought that of her at all. Like, it didn't seem like that's how he was thinking of her. But whatever. I did find her chapters. Boy, I don't know. I just felt that she has this theory that they're gods, right? Super interesting theory. I love that. That's it. We get no expansion on that. Almost no expansion on this at all. So her chapters aren't these musings on this is how we're God, you know, maybe this is how like ancient Greece tied in or something. None of that. It's a lot of her. I felt like so many of her chapters were just, I don't have feelings and being mad at people, not liking Carissa. Like,
yeah.
We didn't get much from her, I guess. Even though she had a really, really interesting theory that I would love to learn more about, I don't feel like that was focused on enough with her chapters. Her chapters were, you know, I don't know.
Right. A little bit lacking.
Yeah.
We did get a little bit more of her backstory.
That's true. We did.
Which was good to have, I think. Mm-hmm. We have a better understanding of her. And it sounds like her stepfather had interest in the past in using her as like a weapon,
mm-hmm.
And had worked with Tristan's old employer, James Wexler, I think his name is. I understand the least about her.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like Ezra, Libby's ex,
mm-hmm.
was a fool
mm-hmm.
and an idealist to believe that collaborating with six of the greatest enemies of the society would work out favorably in the long run, even in the short run.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if he managed to succeed in overthrowing the society and liberating the vast library of knowledge, there is no way that the people from the forum and those other organizations would actually make it possible for all of that knowledge to be available to the public. Mm-hmm. Rich folks don't work that way.
No. They absolutely do not.
The exclusivity of it is what makes it valuable.
Yeah.
If everyone could use it, what value would it be to them? Rich mm-hmm. folks like feeling rich.
And he doesn't understand that. He mentions in one of his chapters something about feeling he didn't have that confidence that comes with entitlement or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that kind of plays into that idealism and stuff.
Right.
But also, I didn't read his chapters super well. I kept falling asleep, so I ended up just skipping most. I don't know what it is about. I don't know. Because it's not like it's bad. I don't know. I know that he wants to distribute the information and he maybe loves Libby.
Yeah.
His chapters were hard for me, and I just started skipping them.
Yeah. There is a new character in this story. Her name is Belen.
Mm-hmm.
And her storyline is my favorite side quest, I think. She shows up in the past in 1989 as a grad student working with the other Medeans that Libby has been collaborating with in the past,
mm-hmm.
which is how she meets Libby. And she starts to work with Libby on a project while Libby is trying to figure out how to get back to the present.
Mm-hmm.
I hate how she was used and manipulated by Libby.
Yes.
Because I do think she's a great character. And her optimism was really great. And I feel like she really was taken advantage of kind of by Libby. And I don't think Libby saw herself as taking advantage of her in the moment, but that is definitely what happened.
Yeah, there was also, to me, it felt like a power dynamic between them.
Yes.
Right? And I think that really contributes to this feeling of Libby kind of letting her down, because there is a scene where they almost hook up. I was mm-hmm. like, this is kind of uncomfortable, because I feel like there is this power dynamic happening here. Yeah.
It's almost, Libby is not one of her professors, but she is teaching classes at the Los Angeles Magic School, and so she is a professor, and so there is definitely that position of authority. She even mentions how her grandmother died in the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
and Belen didn't take off to go to her funeral or anything because she felt like Libby needed her. Libby said that she needed her.
Yeah. And she was so idealistic, right? And she finds out that Libby's from the future, and she's basically, oh, have we cured the planet? And mm-hmm. Libby has to tell her no. Which, So clearly Libby was supposed to be in the past, right? Like this timeline is appropriate, right?
Yeah.
This is right. So I wonder what would have happened if Libby never went to the past. And because that means, how did you say her name? Belen? Belen or
Belen.
Belen? Okay. Belen. She knew before she even, I guess, really graduated, right? That it was pretty much hopeless that people weren't going to do things. So I wonder if she'd been able to keep her optimism.
Yeah.
Maybe things would have turned out differently.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
Right.
Yeah.
What if Libby hadn't decided to time jump into the future, which is what she does? She creates a nuclear fusion explosion, I guess, and that generates the energy to get her back into the future. What if she had never done that? She had just decided to stay in the past. Could they have done something about the climate change issues? Because that's Belen's big thing.
Yeah. I know, there was a point where I was wondering, I was like, well, if Libby stays, maybe she can help. She knows some things that are coming, right?
Yeah.
But then you get into such messy situations with the things.
Yeah. Paradoxes, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Paradoxes. Atlas
Exactly.
paradox. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting some really tricky situations. So
I feel like Belen's perspective pretty closely mirrors some of the things that we see, like in our world as well. Knowing, having the awareness of climate change and the ability to do something about it, and it's still not a priority. She also goes on to talk about colonizers and how, when they do make change, the biggest countries are the ones that get the most help, and the smaller countries, like hers, the Philippines, get the shaft and get blamed. Reminded me of this thing I read recently about the United States exporting trash to other countries.
Yeah. I really love that she funds revolts to
Yeah.
Indonesia and Vietnam. I absolutely love that. It's amazing. And it kind of reflects what's going on in the real world. So, oh my gosh. Niger, right? They recently pushed the French colonizers out of their country and are currently trying to push out the US.
Good
And
for them.
right. So,
Yeah.
yay. Yeah.
Do
So
it.
it made me think of that. Yes. Come on, do it. Yeah. Apparently I think they've taken out like two out of three of like the drone bases or something.
That's what, yeah, I think I saw something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's exciting in like real world.
Yes, it is. Good for them.
Yes. But yeah, I really loved her, and she was a voice of reason. I don't know if reason is really a reality,
Yeah.
right? Very much a reality check because so few people realize how deeply like colonized every single country is and how ingrained it is in absolutely everything. She brings up a at one point she says something about spirits, and Libby asks her, oh, is that a Catholic thing? And she's like, it's more of a colonizer thing. Like, because that's all also connected. And she sees it. And she makes another comment later on about how a corn-fed family in Iowa isn't going to right away notice that, let's say, the Philippines are gone, but eventually it's going to impact them because it's all part of the same ecosystem, right?
Right.
So,
Yeah.
sorry, I just really loved her.
No, I really like that too. She makes another really good comment. It's when she is, she finds out about Libby, and she calls her out and basically says, like, I wanted you to tell me that you got some morals. I wanted you to, be better, right?
Yeah.
And so she says she had once fallen in love with a professor who was not a professor, who represented power and femininity and the promise of taking the things that she deserved, who turned out to be just another white girl, who thought that whatever obscure thing she was born to accomplish was worth more than Belen's entire future.
Right. Yep. Well, that's a big thing. White feminism.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. Yeah. Ties in with that.
Yeah. I just thought it was great. She made another comment about how, so she ended up becoming like an activist in the future. She became an activist for climate change and things like that and won some awards and stuff. But kind of got shuffled on back, and that's when she started funding revolts and things like that, which is terrific. And then they killed her, and I was so angry.
I was upset for several reasons. First off, why did you kill her? She was great. And then also, I was really sad that her last thoughts were so angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And about Libby, which
Yeah.
is interesting because Ezra was there with some guy, I can't remember his name, and he's the one that killed her. She was thinking about how she loved and hated Libby. Ezra was there.
Yeah. I'm really curious as to what she thought, because she said she did basically her own background check on Libby. So she knew she didn't actually come from that school, couldn't find any trace of her. And I want to know what, who, or what, I guess, she thought Libby was.
Yeah.
Right? Because then when she finds out, she's very taken aback,
Right.
which
She's
obviously time travel would probably be very low on the list, right?
right.
So I want to know kind of what she thought it was. I would have to say it'd be really hard in the past and not make references to things from the present, right? I
Yeah.
make so many jokes that are from TV shows or books or songs. Like,
Yeah.
I'd go in the past and be like, do you guys remember that song, All Star? That was the anthem.
Anytime someone said, "Hey, now,"
Yes.
you follow it up with, "You're an all-star."
Yep.
Libby interacts with some male teachers while she's in the past. They are as cringe as you would expect them to be.
Yep. Yeah, so they were definitely very dismissive of her just because she was a woman, right? We're dealing with early 90s. So not a lot of women. And I guess this is kind of in the way of you, it's kind of the equivalent of STEM for some reason in my head. I
Yeah.
kind of see this as like STEM. Definitely not a lot of women in that back then.
Right.
But also she makes a comment about how these teachers seem to be happy and take pride when their students fail their class, right? Being like, ah, oh, we're just such hard teachers, instead of thinking, maybe I need to be a better teacher. Because if you're
Yeah.
teaching a class and you only have like two or three people in it who are passing or who really understand what's going on, maybe you're the problem,
Right.
right? And why do you want to become a teacher just to make people's lives worse, right?
Right.
Like, what is the point of this? You should want your students to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. They were pretty garbage. There's this one moment early. It's when Libby first meets Velen, and there, so she's asking questions about major sources of power because she's trying to find something major to help her get back to the present. And Velen suggests ley lines, which have shown, I mean, they've shown up in a bunch of other like fantasy books that we've read. Ley lines are like magical power lines, essentially. And the guy, I think his name is Mort, maybe,
Sounds about
goes on like this major shame tirade for
right.
her for referencing back to ley lines, which are all over the world, and is why they go to Scotland. I did love for Libby that she did choose herself, and instead of staying in time, she chose to damn the consequences and use a nuclear explosion to blast herself back into the present. Because Libby from the Atlas Paradox, no, from the Atlas Six, would have felt a lot of guilt about the fallout that people in the past would experience from nuclear radiation. And she may still feel that, but she still chose herself and to blast herself into the present.
I have to say, it might not have. I mean, I'm sure it was a difficult decision, but she knows she already did it and it was already done, right? Because
Yeah.
Tristan comes back and is like, you did this. and nobody died, but obviously people got cancer. And so this timeline has already played out.
Right.
Her staying is what's going to do it. And, you know, whatchamacallit brings up, like, you're going to do this. You notice he specifically said nobody died, not nobody got hurt.
Right.
And it's so we're looking at the present, though. And all those people, yeah, they've basically already had cancer, you know, all of this right. stuff happened. So her not doing that have a massive effect right. on the present, right? Because who knows what these people could have been, would have been, could have been good, could have been bad. Their cancer may have led to breakthroughs. Who knows, right? So, but I do love, like, alternate universes, alternate timelines, alternate mm-hmm. worlds. So I really hope, I mean, she probably won't write it, but there's probably somewhere out there, if we're right about there being multiple timelines, where Libby chose to stay in the past. And I want to know how that worked out. But I'd say knowing that you've already done something probably makes it easier to do. Like, well, I already made this decision once. Let's do it again, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed all of the time we got to spend with Gideon.
Yeah.
He was super cute. I just kind of want to, like, put him in my pocket and take him around with me.
Yeah. I was, the first chapter, I think, was his.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a prologue. And I was super confused to jump into the book like that after, like, previously. I was like, what is happening? Because he's mentioned, am I awake? Am I asleep? Is this consciousness? What's happening? Just like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm 9 pages into this book.
I forgot who Gideon was for a second. It's like, wait a minute, who is this?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
The bad guy? Who is this guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
I really liked him. You know, he and Nico, they've got their thing.
Oh my gosh. They were so cute. Mm-hmm. There's that one scene where Nico is, like, FaceTiming him and he's like, just talk to me. Just tell me about your day. Tell me whatever you want and I'll listen. Adorable. I wanted them to kiss the whole book and they finally did.
Yes. Oh, they're just so great.
They're so cute.
Yes. And I love Gideon's just, like, funny too in dreams, right? So when he was trying to break out the prince, which turns out to be Dalton, right? I still don't completely understand.
Yeah.
What's happening there, but, you know, he, like, uses gumdrops and tornado hands to help him get there, and I just love that
marshmallow. That scene was super good too, because we do actually get some action.
Yes, that's true.
Things actually happen.
Yes.
So in the dream world, he fights Dream Parisa. She's a knight in black armor trying to keep him from getting to Dalton's consciousness, subconscious, really, it sounds like. And he battles her, and he's super skilled, obviously, because that's his ability. Mm-hmm. That scene was spectacular. And he thinks he's going to die, and his last thoughts are about Nico, and that's what Parisa stops Parisa. That's what keeps him alive. She hears him thinking about Nico and how much he loves him, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a good scene.
It was cute. There's quite a bit of LGBTQ representation in this story as well, which we always like to see.
Yeah, I think Reyna, she's asexual, mm-hmm. right? She mentions she just doesn't understand. She's never had any sort of feelings like that.
Yeah. So. And Libby is bi. Nico's by
Tristan is.
Yes. And
Callum might be?
Callum might be, yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, most of our characters.
We find out that Atlas Blakely has depression. That's Callum's study. He gets Atlas Blakely's journals, I guess, from the library.
Could you imagine his presentation being like, and my presentation is, you're depressed. There you go. I solved it. Take some, like, Xanax or Zoloft or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's after this, like, big discovery regarding Atlas, and he discovers that everyone in their year dies because Atlas didn't go along with the library's need to murder somebody, and he just did what he wanted, which meant everybody died. And that seems really on par with him.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of him. Like, he just seems... So I guess he's trying to atone.
Is that it?
Well, in a way, because he seems guilty about it. He feels guilty about it. That's mentioned. But I don't know how, in what way he's trying to atone, right? Maybe he's not trying to atone, because it doesn't. His actions don't really make up for that. But he feels bad.
Yeah. I don't fully understand his desire to generate a multiverse. Does he want to go to he just does not care anymore, and he's cool with everything going, you know, being apocalyptic? Like, who cares about this world? We'll just go to a next. Like, are we talking about that kind of depression? Is he trying to get to a world where all of those people are not dead and are still alive? What is his goal?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is this hopelessness and we're just trying to find another world? Because he makes a comment, Tristan makes a comment about how, you know, if they do figure out how to do the multiverse thing, it could be catastrophic for the world that they're in. And Atlas is like, meh.
There's nothing here anyway.
I mean, I don't know if that's seeking atonement.
No, it's well. I mean, maybe he wants to go to another, like you said, another place to, where they're alive. Or is he seeking? So he is doing the multi-world thing. So it's not necessarily time that he's looking to traverse, right?
No, it's a whole new world. Yeah,
yeah. All right. I don't know.
He's not. I don't think he's trying to turn back time. That's not what it sounds like.
Maybe he's just doing it because he can.
Maybe. Again, it kind of speaks to a little bit of hopeless feeling.
Yeah.
It's the vibe I'm getting. I don't know. I don't get, like, malicious vibes.
Right, yeah. No, not, I don't think he's malicious. Although, every time they talk to him, so, like, Tristan goes and has a talk with him, and Atlas says something to him, and that makes... Tristan be like, oh, you're using me, and why do you even talk to him? Yes, that's all he's interested in. He just wants to use you. He doesn't like anyone. Stop talking to him. I would not talk to this man.
Everything there is using you.
Yeah,
nobody's here to be your friend.
Yeah, would not be talking to this person. And if I was there, and if I could make her my friend, I would take Paris with me everywhere.
Yeah,
to tell me what people are thinking.
I'd
job interview. Come with me.
I wouldn't want that. I'm better off not knowing what everybody else is thinking.
I would definitely use it in like 10 situations, but like a job interview would be really helpful.
Yeah.
In an argument with somebody, I want to know what they're thinking.
Yeah. I feel like the only person from here that I would actually want to spend any time with would maybe be Nico.
Yeah.
Or maybe Libby. We could probably get on with the anxiety.
Yeah. Libby and Eagle. I really didn't mind Tristan as much in this book.
He was okay. I think he had, you know, some character development from the last book to this book. Did a lot of sulking in the last book.
He was very tiresome in the last book.
Yeah. And so he's at least trying.
He is.
In this one.
Yeah. I think he's got upward momentum going on, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he also, I feel like he was one of the only other characters that cared for others outside of himself.
Yeah.
So, points to him for that, I guess. And it was nice to see him get some self-worth, right? Because that was one of the big problems with him in the last book. It was like, I'm terrible. I've got nothing. What am I? Oh, God. I'm sorry. I won't. It's just tiring.
Yeah.
Right? And in this, though, he says things like, I won't forgive anyone else who makes me ask myself if I deserve to live. Mm-hmm. You know, he recognizes that he has power and he goes after it. Like, you know, and I just felt like some of his chapters had more depth. Felt like a lot of like Callum and Raina and Parisa. A lot of their inner monologues were like, I don't need anyone. Emotions are dumb. I don't have emotions. Intimacy is dumb. Love is dumb. I'm lonely. and I'm gonna drink. Like,
yeah.
So I felt like, you know, kind of, I don't know. I just was not as exhausted by him as I was last time. And I appreciated that, especially what's going on with the other characters. And, you know, always love to see people grow.
Right. And in terms of overall character growth, I think that this is the character that probably demonstrated the most growth.
Mm-hmm.
Callum, maybe. I don't know if we would call Callum's downward spiral growth. He definitely seemed perhaps a little bit less self-involved. Or maybe he was even more self-involved. I think he was more willing to help.
Yeah.
He was at least willing to help Raina, and maybe that's because he didn't have any friends because he was not speaking with Tristan. Though I still got the vibe that he kind of wanted to be his friend. And then I also got the vibe that he kind of wanted to be his lover. So I don't know.
I wasn't sure either.
Yeah.
Yes. I really think his best friend almost killing him was probably the best thing to ever happen to him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't really see that coming.
No.
And, you know, the one, it was a good thing.
Yeah.
Once he digs himself out of this depression hole, I think he'll come out better. He'll
probably come out as an egotistical god.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like Parisa's interactions with Dalton were really interesting. This started in the last book, and there were some things that happened that we didn't understand. Now we have at least a better understanding of it. The character that's inside of the castle in Dalton's unconscious mind, I guess, was put there by Atlas. He somehow separated part of his consciousness and hid it away in a castle. He locked away his ambition, I think is what he said.
Yes. Yeah, he specifically said ambition. And that makes me wonder, how ambitious could he have been that?
Dalton, what were you trying to do?
That this is the best route to take. I want to know why.
I mean,
not something that you just cut out for no reason.
Well, his power is like creating life, isn't it?
He's an animator.
I know, but that has to do with like creation energy, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think
maybe,
like,
he thinks he's a god.
Maybe. I'm very curious what Dalton would be like with his ambition. I mean, they let him. Do they let him out? Kind of.
Dalton. I mean, well, once he, so Gideon liberates him from his mind, which I'm curious about because Gideon's mother was the one that wanted him to do that. Why? What did she stand to gain from that? Because she is a very selfish person. There's no way she would be motivated to do this if there wasn't some kind of gain for her.
Yeah. So how ambitious was he?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, she's very selfish and she goes, I want the ambition that this guy locked away. I need it unlocked. It's got to be something big.
Yeah.
That's not a little thing.
Yeah. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then it's interesting his interactions with Parisa that follow, because he is trying to finish his work for the society, but this part of his personality that they have unboxed is not going back into the box the way that it did before. So he has these flashes where ambitious Dalton shows up and there's all this conflict. And it's interesting because they have he has this conversation with Parisa where he basically says that he loves her and makes a comment about how she can't love anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes on to talk about how, and it makes sense, how difficult it would be to love somebody or to let yourself be loved or to let yourself love another person when you could know everyone's thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Also, the people that she did love, didn't they betray
they were
them?
Bad to her. Yes. Yeah. She was betrayed many times.
Yeah.
And abused. Yeah.
For Nico's inner monologue, we kind of touched on this a little bit about how he needs other people around him.
Yeah.
I feel like Nico needs to find out who Nico is, right?
Yeah.
So for both Libby and Gideon, he mentions that he doesn't know who he is without them, right? Like,
right.
And obviously it's great to have really close friends, but at the same time, you know, figure yourself out a little bit. It's kind of what I got from his
yes
thing. That, and then he had that scene with Parisa, and he just seemed very touch-starved, maybe, or just right. starved for interactions with people in general. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Tristan is pretty much the only person he's interacting with. Right?
Right. Yeah. And even his interactions with Tristan are not, like, fun conversational interactions.
No, he has
they are him trying to murder him.
Yeah. So he finally gets, like, you know, some, I guess, softness and love and stuff.
Right.
Sweet. And he seems to be the one that the house feeds on the most.
Yeah, what was that? I wondered if it was because of his relation, like how close he was with Libby, or like because of like the type of magic that he and Libby had, and with her being gone, mm-hmm. he was more affected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was just, you know, it was an emotional thing, because now it's, you know, it just makes him more vulnerable and easier to prey on, for the mm-hmm. house to prey on. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't fully understand why that was, that the house decided to feed off of their energy.
Yeah.
If it was because they didn't completely fulfill the terms of the, like, the society, like, the library thing. Because mm-hmm. nobody died.
Yeah.
Sacrifice seems to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does that mean for the next book? Because they're all alive.
Right.
The library will demand, it sounds like, it's due. So is someone going to die? Are they all going to die?
Throw Atlas into the house. Here you go.
Kill him. Everyone died.
Well, you know what? You know part of the tagline for the next book?
Oh, I think you put it in the notes, didn't you?
I did. It, part of the blurb is the much anticipated heart-shattering conclusion. Somebody died. You don't have heart-shattering?
I don't know that there's one character that I would feel heart-shattered about.
I'm wondering if it, like, the whole world is destroyed or something. Maybe. That's pretty shattering. I really think that Helen's death may have been the most.
Yeah, I'm the most. Gideon, I would probably be pretty upset. That's if Gideon true. Died. He's pretty sweet, and I kind of love him.
Yeah.
Ezra has a final conversation with Atlas. He shows up at the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like lost seeming, almost.
Yeah.
Things have not turned out the way that he thought they would.
No.
Part of that is also that he is struggling with his original intentions, his purpose. He's realized that maybe some of this stuff that he thought was going to work out with all of these people is not going to work out. And so the realization then becomes he took the woman that he loved,
mm-hmm.
put her 30 or more years in the past, didn't help her, actively harmed her almost. I mean, and now what? What was all of that for?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that just kind of, you see some of that idealism show up, right? It didn't turn out the way that he thought it was would. But Libby
mm-hmm.
being extraordinary. Oh, and I thought what was interesting with that as well is that Atlas pleads with him, like, change your mind. Change the plan. We can still go back and do what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm. He also says, go ahead and kill me, because there's no for.
Yeah. See, and again, I'm concerned about Atlas's mental state.
He's not sure he should be the one running things if he's just like, yes, kill me.
Yeah. Right. So things are fraught, but Libby shows up. She makes it back into the present. And murders Ezra.
Amazing.
And it was
just like
awesome. Yeah. Yes. Incinerates him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's going to feel bad about that later.
Yeah. She's, I think, going to have a lot of struggle with her conscience.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a kick-ass moment.
It really was.
It was a big moment for Libby.
Mm-hmm.
But wow. So I felt kind of weird about it because I did not get the vibe in the first book that Ezra really loved Libby. But in this book, I mean, it kind of seemed like he did.
Yeah, I know. He mentions that, oh, she has to forgive him, right?
Yeah.
And then he also has this like little blurb about intimacy. It's like, what was intimacy other than knowing her hopes, her dreams, her nightmares, you know, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And definitely showed much more feeling towards her in this than I think he did in the last one.
Libby shows up, final moments.
Mm-hmm.
Calls out Nico's name. They're reunited. It feels so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I am real curious about what's to happen in the next book. It definitely seems like something catastrophic is on deck.
Don't look it up.
I'm not, because I might not read the book if I do that. Are there any quotes that you liked?
So this was actually the very beginning of the book. And Gideon is saying this or thinking this. There is doom to be found everywhere if doom is what you seek. I had several thoughts on this. What, I mean, it's totally true. If that's your mindset, if you're like pessimistic or optimistic, if you're looking for bad things, you're going to find it, right? If you look mm-hmm. for problems, they'll pop up. But also, it's such a reflection of the Harry Potter quote,
oh.
right? It seemed like so much, oh, there is light only if you look for it.
Right.
It's like, there is doom if you want it.
Yeah. Brené Brown has a really good quote as it relates to belonging. If you are looking for signs that you don't belong, you will find the signs that you don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
To feel a sense of belonging, you have to look for signs that you do.
Yep.
Because when you look for the signs that you don't, you start doing things that take you away. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're like, oh, today's going to be a bad day.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, this obviously is a small scale thing, but.
All right. Well, that wraps up The Atlas Paradox by Olivia Blake. Join us next time. We'll be discussing Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief by Rick Riordan. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Literary Quest. We hope you enjoyed our episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we can be found at Literary Quest Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. You're also welcome to share your thoughts and ideas with us via email at literaryquestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.